The Holy Gospel according to Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. Now on that same day, two disciples were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And Jesus said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women in our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him." Then Jesus said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory? Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening, and the day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When Jesus was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed and has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road and how Jesus had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
So Carrie and I were very, very excited that this was the reading that I got to speak about. And to explain why, I have to kind of give you a bit of my faith journey. So I was born and raised very United Methodist, and when I was a kid, I was steadfast in my faith. My parents were Sunday school teachers. My mom was on the Spiritual Development and Worship Committee. My dad was and is the chair of the Finance Committee. He's a trustee. I was there not just on Sundays, but like on Wednesdays when my mom had meetings and we had babysitters in the Sunday school room. I was in church a lot, and that was a big part of who I was. And I knew from middle school on that I was going to be a pastor. I was the only one that I knew in my school who wanted to be a pastor as a 13-year-old. But I was certain of that, and I knew I was going to major in religion and psychology in undergrad. And so I got to college, I joined the Protestant chapel community, was on the executive board, and I worked at a United Methodist summer camp that I grew up at during the summers. But then I started to notice a disconnect in my faith. When we said prayers, I would speak most of them, but I started to mouth the parts I wasn't so sure about. But everyone has highs and lows in their faith journey, right? And I was going to be a pastor. I was majoring in religion. So this was just a passing moment, and everything would sort itself out. it's kind of hard when doubts about your faith lead to doubts about your career and future. It's easier to just set that aside. But all of those walls and denials came crashing down in Salt Lake City during the 2015 convening of the Parliament of the World's Religions. I had a few minutes between the different panels I wanted to attend, and I was walking a prayer labyrinth made of blue painter's tape over the smooth stone floor of the exhibit hall. I had hoped that weekend would energize me spiritually and that I would suddenly fully believe in Christ again. Instead, I felt like an outsider, an imposter among a crowd of genuinely religious people who led amazing lives. I thought about every time I'd been asked about my religion that weekend. "I'm a Christian," I would reply. As I walked the labyrinth, I repeated that to myself with every step. "I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian." By the time I got to the center, I knew it wasn't true. In the middle of the stark white, echoey exhibit hall, I sat down and started to cry. Once I accepted that, I felt so much better. I knew I still believed in God, but I wasn't trying to cling to a label that didn't quite fit. I quit my executive board position with the Protestant Chapel community, and I started exploring other faith traditions on campus. None of them really stuck, though, and eventually it kind of became, okay, religion is the thing that I'm studying, but I wasn't really doing anything outside of that. So I ended up leading an interesting life after graduation. I worked for an interfaith group called the Abrahamic Reunion, a peace-building group bringing together Christians, Muslims, Jews, and Druze, which is a much smaller faith in Israel-Palestine. But if you ask me what my own faith was, I had no answer. I usually deflected with, "I was raised Christian." It didn't really bother me not having a label. I still felt enriched just being around other spiritual and religious people, even though I'd stopped exploring other traditions in my spare time. My life was both full of religion in the general sense and totally devoid of it in the personal sense. But for the time being, it worked. Eventually, like many small nonprofits, the Abrahamic Reunion ran out of money to pay me, and I had to move away and find a different job. For a few years, I worked for my old university, and religion played no role in my life whatsoever. It was odd sometimes to realize that something that had always been such a major part of my life in one way or another was suddenly absent. But for the most part, I just didn't dwell on that empty space. But eventually, I started dwelling on it and all the goals I had had for myself. I had wanted to do peace-building work in Israel-Palestine, and I had already had my dream job right out of college. But here I was now, sitting at a desk doing data processing instead. I wanted to get back into the peace-building world, back into the cause I cared so much about, so I decided to go back to school. But what do you go to school for? Harvard was actually the only divinity school that I applied to. The others were a program in international peace studies at Notre Dame and a degree in conflict resolution at Georgetown. Something about HDS just felt right, and I realized that I wanted to approach peace building through a religious lens. I still didn't feel religious, and so I labeled my religion as none on the forms. But if anywhere was going to fix my faith problem, it would be a divinity school, right? I didn't care if I came out Christian on the other end or not, as long as I felt connected to God again. So I spent my first year waiting to feel that connection. And waiting. And waiting. And despite having some incredible experiences, my relationship with God didn't magically snap into place, no matter how much tuition cost. Year one was a whirlwind of activity, but I didn't exactly feel myself getting closer to God with every assignment I turned in or class that I passed. Despite being at divinity school, I was too busy to find God. So this year, year two, I told myself I needed to slow down a bit and listen for him. And then I didn't. Because it's really hard to do that when you're in grad school and have events and papers and tests and readings to do. Not to mention an internship at a church. Honestly, I didn't expect to end up at a church, since I no longer wanted to be a pastor and didn't consider myself a Christian. But then, here at UniLU, I started to feel that connection again. And I realized it didn't come from being in a church, it came from being in a community. And then I realized this feeling was more familiar than I expected. I had felt it much more recently than I thought. It wasn't something I'd been missing for years. I'd been feeling it all along. This love, this passion, this fire in my heart, this drive for justice, it had been there in my interactions with others, in laughing with my friends or singing around a campfire, in spending time with my family, in the difficult moments where the people I love supported me and I supported them. I had the same revelation as the men on their way to Emmaus. Was not my heart burning within me during all these moments of human connection? Is that not where God is for me? Is that not where I feel him the most? Isn't he most present when we look in each other's eyes, when we spend time together and eat and laugh and sing? I didn't feel God in the places I expected to, and I assumed he just wasn't there. But he had been there all along, walking beside me. And I realized he had been especially present when I worked with the Abrahamic Reunion, the group I mentioned earlier. And so I'd like to tell you a little bit more about them. Their mission is to help people recognize the humanity in each other. They are an apolitical group. They have people of all political backgrounds with all sorts of ideas of how to solve Israel-Palestine. But the one thing they all agree on is that no matter what political solution there is, there's this gap between the people. And they share these similarities in religion, so religion can be used to bridge that gap. So they have all sorts of events, text studies, which they start with the story of Joseph, because nobody's trying to kill each other over Joseph. And then they get into the more controversial topics. They have family forums where the parents cook together and the kids play together. They have music nights, women's nights, an interfaith iftar every year. And one thing these all things all have in common is food, is breaking bread. And I wasn't in Israel, Palestine for most of my time there. I did get to visit. And one of the events we did was one of these family forums. And it was at a mosque just north of Tel Aviv called Sidna Ali Mosque. And they were really hesitant to let us have our event there. There had been threats, terrorist attacks. It had just been vandalized a few months before. But the imam knew one of my bosses and trusted him, so he said, okay, you guys can have your event in the courtyard. You can't come inside at all. So we had to quickly readjust, and it became a potluck instead of actually cooking because we couldn't use the kitchen. But it was still a really beautiful event. We weren't able to bring Palestinians in for that one in particular because it was right around Israel's 70th anniversary, so borders were very much locked down. But we had Arab Israelis and Israeli Jews playing together, eating together. There were these two little boys playing soccer together, couldn't have been older than 5 years old, and they were running around, playing, screaming, running up to their parents and introducing each other as, this is my best friend that I met 5 minutes ago, in the way that only little kids can. And by the end of it, the imam got up unprompted and turned to all of us and invited us back for iftar in a few months. In just those couple hours, that breaking bread, that being human together, his heart had opened and changed, and they did go back a few months later and have iftar there. So the point is, breaking bread is where Jesus reveals himself in the story, and it is where we see God in each other. But there's another part of the story that I think is also important to touch on. So to just set the scene again, think about what's going through their minds. They're walking away from Jerusalem after all of this. This is on Easter Sunday, 2 days after Jesus has been crucified. And they'd heard that he was back, but they hadn't seen it. Nobody had actually gone and seen him. There were visions of angels. The tomb was empty. But where was Jesus? And so when they meet this man on the road who is intentionally kept from recognizing him, and they're asked what's going on, and the line that sticks out to me is, "But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel." But we had hoped. Because especially in today's world, how often are we thinking that? We had hoped things would be different. We had hoped this country would be safe for everyone inside it. We had hoped there would be peace. There are a million things that we could say in today's world, because this isn't the world we had hoped to live in. And when I was writing this part of the sermon, I had to keep double-checking my wording, because honestly, I kept thinking of a similar line in Lord of the Rings. When Frodo says, "I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish that none of this had happened." Because it's the same idea as we had hoped. And Gandalf replies, "So do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us." So what were these men on their way to Emmaus doing with the time that was given to them when they had hoped, when they wished to see something different? They were still sharing the story of Jesus. They were sharing the story of their teacher, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people. They didn't realize that Jesus was still with them. They thought he was gone. They couldn't feel his presence. And still, they shared the good news. They shared that story. And they shared it to Jesus. And I think that's the key here. Jesus is still walking with us, whether we feel it or not, whether we are in the middle of a duct tape labyrinth, or in a church, or out in the world, or at a protest, or at work, or in bed at night, even when we don't feel him, Jesus is walking with us. Even when it's not the world we had hoped for, Jesus is walking with us. And it's up to us to decide what we're going to do in that moment, whether we feel him or not, whether we recognize him or not. What are we going to do with the news and the lessons and the love that he has given us? Well, we recognize that love in others. We talk to each other. We connect with each other. We laugh and sing and eat together and find that humanity in each other. We urge people to stay with us because it's almost evening and the day is now nearly over. We don't turn them away and say, "Yeah, keep going to Emmaus," or past Emmaus. Even if we don't recognize that they're Jesus, we don't recognize the godliness in everyone right away, but we still welcome them in, we still break bread with them, and we come to find that spark of godliness in them. There's one saying that my mentor used to say all the time, and has always kind of stuck with me as where my faith has ended up. He says, every religion, every person has a bit of the truth in it, but nobody's got it exactly right. Every single person has some truth in them, and it's only by coming together that we can get the whole truth. And I think that's where I'm at. I still don't know what label I have, but I know that by coming together, we find the truth. We find God. We find humanity. And it helps us see and recognize that God has been walking with us the entire time. Amen.